You're listening to the Deal Farm Podcast with Ken Corsini. Educating, inspiring, and connecting you to real estate deals. And now, your host, Ken Corsini.
Hey, this is Ken Corsini with The Deal Farm. On today's Best Deal Ever episode, I am joined by Doug and Andrea Van Soest, real estate investors out of Southern California. Their company, SoCal Home Buyers, has bought and sold over 350 houses, and they've collected a rental portfolio of over 57 units. They are fellow Collective Genius members and also have a podcast called Spouses Flipping Houses. I'm super excited to have them on the show. So guys, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Well, glad to have you on. Always good to have a fellow CG member on the podcast.
Absolutely.
So, hey, did I just miss you guys? Were you there at the last one a couple weeks back?
We had to miss that one.
Yeah.
Oh, did you really? Well, that's a long – you guys are coming from Southern California. That's a long flight to Tampa too. So if there's one to miss, it's the one that's on the other side of the country, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be there in Denver though. We're excited about that.
Good. Well, looking forward to seeing you guys there. So you guys are in Murrieta. We were just talking about this. I'm actually born or just raised in Marietta as opposed to Murrieta. And that is, I guess, tell folks where that is in Southern California.
All right. So yeah, Murrieta, it's part of the Inland Empire in Southern California. Basically, we're an hour north of San Diego and about 2 hours east of LA. So believe it or not, we have about 4 or 5 million people out here. It's just a huge area.
In the city of Murrieta or just Inland Empire? Oh,
no, just the Inland Empire. Yeah, Murrieta itself's got about 100,000 people.
That's like the size of Atlanta. I mean, and it's just
yeah.
That's crazy. That's huge. And so you do most of your business in that Inland Empire area?
Pretty much.
Yeah, the majority of it's there. Riverside, San Bernardino counties is the counties that kind of encompass most of the Inland Empire.
Now, how long have you guys been at real estate investing?
2008, we bought our first fix and flip property right during the massive crash that was happening.
Oh no. Well, so I guess take us farther back. What were you doing before you even got into real estate, and what was sort of the impetus to get you into real estate?
Well, we both graduated from college in the year 2000 and got jobs right out of college. I was a teacher. Doug was an admissions counselor at the school that we had gone to. And Doug's best friend gave us that book that probably got a lot of people started in this business, Rich Dad Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki.
You are like the 10th podcast interviewee that said the exact same thing. That is a very impactful book, The Rich Dad Poor Dad.
Yeah.
Very influential, definitely.
And, you know, we were both partial business majors from a great school. And a lot of what we had read in this book, it was just mind-blowing to us. It was concepts we had never even heard of.
Yeah. Just it opened up our mind completely to – the world of being self-employed, owning a business, investing. Like, we just hadn't ever even really considered that as a path.
Sure.
But at that time, real estate kind of felt out of our reach. And so we decided we were going to take the entrepreneurial route instead. So we quit our jobs and actually moved out to Colorado and started a kettle corn business out there.
What?
Yeah.
I love kettle corn.
It's so good. We still love it today.
So, you know, what's so funny about that is, there was a time before I got into real estate, I liked kettle corn so much. Every time we'd go to like a farmer's market or something, that I looked in, just like, Anita, this is my wife, I got to figure out how I can get one of these setups because I love it so much. That's so funny. So was it a franchise of some sort?
No, we just started our own thing. And actually we focused on the sporting venues in Colorado. So we got it into the Denver Broncos Stadium, the World Arena, Pikes Peak International Raceway. So not only were we getting to make and eat great popcorn, but we were getting to attend all these really fun events as well.
Yeah. Air Force Academy games.
Really?
Yeah. It was a lot of fun.
So why did you move to Colorado to start that business? Why not do it where you were? Just curious.
Well, some good friends of ours were doing it in San Diego and they taught us how to do it. So it was kind of a deal where you teach us how and we won't compete with you. We'll go somewhere else.
Okay. And you guys are originally from Southern California?
I am. Doug's from New Mexico.
Yeah, I was actually born in Colorado, which is kind of why we chose that. I have some roots there. Okay. But I was raised in New Mexico.
Oh, interesting. Many people from New Mexico. So you guys land in Colorado. You start this business. And how did the business go?
It went well. I mean, we're like weekend warriors. You work basically Wednesday through Sunday, just work hard for every event or whatever event's going on at that time. And then we just kind of had fun, you know, Monday, Tuesday, and hung out. And it was great. I mean, we made a good living. We're newly married. We're off on this adventure. And we just had a blast doing it. So we did it for about 2 years.
2 years, yeah. But ultimately, I think we realized that we were kind of slaves to this business. And as much fun as we were having, it wasn't really the direction that we wanted to go. We started feeling pulled back towards real estate. And now it was kind of feeling like maybe this is actually something we could do.
Yeah. So we actually ended up selling the kettle corn business after 2 years and took that money. We moved back to Southern California and decided to focus on real estate. So actually I became an appraiser. Early 2003?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, early 2003. So I became a real estate appraiser. Andrea got her real estate license. And, you know, at that time, pretty much everywhere over the country, but definitely Southern California was booming in terms of prices in real estate.
Sure. Yeah. So you guys were more employed in the business, not necessarily buying and selling just yet.
We were just learning, getting our feet wet. We're wanting to, you know, we were waiting for opportunity, I guess, because it seemed like we were priced out. Things were so high.
Yeah.
But we were, you know, in the market every day, kind of just sort of waiting for our opportunity.
In the same area, Inland Empire at that time?
Yeah, we started in San Diego. We first moved back to San Diego because it was what was familiar to us. And then we actually wanted to buy our own home and couldn't afford San Diego. So that's what actually brought us to the Inland Empire. It was a little more affordable.
Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. So you really waited for almost 5 years before you really jumped in as investors, which you probably saw the market crash then before you jumped in, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, we were anxious and just didn't know what to do. And it's funny because we were actually started listening to podcasts back in 2005 and 6, real estate podcasts. And one of them encouraged us to go to a local RIA, which we didn't know what that was. So we went to a real estate club and we heard a local guy out here by the name of Bruce Norris speak.
Mm-hmm.
And Bruce is a well-respected educator and a hard money lender. And he's also a market timing expert. And this was 2006, and everything is still on fire. And he's saying this thing is going to crash down really hard. He's predicting a crash. And so we, on the one hand, we were upset about that because we just bought a home. On the other hand, we were excited because maybe our opportunity was coming. And so we just started getting more educated on what we can do. And then, sure enough, 2007 and 8 hit, and we just started making offers like crazy on the MLS for bank-owned homes.
Wow. And so you were so when you jumped in, you sort of waited for the market to crash. And I remember that because I got in 2005. And as soon as things started crashing around us, you know, all the big players had sort of lost their shirt and the competition was gone. And there was just so many good houses on MLS that you could just kind of pick them off one after another. Now, at that time, it was tough to flip because there wasn't much of a retail market. What did that look like for you guys? You were buying them on MLS and then just reselling them?
Pretty much. Yeah.
You know, we were cautious. I mean, we knew it was still going down. It kept going down until probably 2010 around here. That's mm-hmm. sort of when it leveled out.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we were making offers, it would be so conservative. We're figuring another 5 to 10% less than what we thought it was worth the day we were making the offer is what we'd actually sell it for.
Oh, my gosh. You're anticipating depreciation.
Yes. Yeah. And we knew that, you know, we're gonna have to make this thing better than all the other homes that are available. So, I mean, our offers were almost 50% of list price or, you know, sort of that REO price that was coming out there.
And you were just making a ton of offers and kind of it was a numbers thing for you at the time?
Pretty much.
Yeah. It was a numbers thing. We put an ad on Craigslist. We need an agent that will write a lot of offers for us. And we got an agent and, you know, it wasn't like it just started happening right away either. I mean, it took us several months of making these lowball offers, getting, you know, just rejected after rejection after rejection. And then, you know, one by one, we just got our first acceptance late 2008. And then we got two more later that year. And then by that time, you know, we'd kind of figured it out and we were full time investing by 2009.
What an interesting way to start too as an appraiser, because you've watched the market so closely for so many years and you really know how to value a property, I think that probably, I would imagine, gave you a real leg up on stepping into being an investor.
Definitely. I think that was the most important thing, looking back, that we brought to the table. Well, that Doug brought to the table, just because it gave us confidence. We felt like we were very confident in what it was going to sell for.
Yeah, I think more than anything, it was the confidence. But you know, what's funny is after we flipped a couple of houses, I felt like I became a thousand times better appraiser after really selling a house and seeing the market react to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting the offers and sort of seeing what that number really is. I felt like I was a lot better appraiser after that.
I believe that. I wish that appraisers had a better feel for the market sometimes.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, the market should be what somebody's willing to pay for a house. And I think appraisers often lose sight of that.
Yeah. Yeah. At that time, there was a lot of, you know, appraisal, quote unquote, problems. I mean, because the only comps were these as-is bank-owned homes.
Mm-hmm.
But there'd be the occasional investor flip, you know, that would get multiple offers over asking price. So you kind of have to be able to justify that. And that's just because, you know, our house had a new kitchen and the other house didn't even have a kitchen. So
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it makes a big difference.
And there was a big shakeup about that time, too, with the whole appraisers and the HVCC rules changing and all that. Did you feel that at the time?
Yeah, 2009 is when the HVCC kicked in. And that's when I started kind of phasing out the appraisal. I thought the writing was on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
My time was better spent, you know, on the MLS, making offers, looking at houses versus trying to do appraisals.
I could totally see how that would make it an easy decision for you to move away from being an appraiser and doing that full time.
Yeah, yeah.
So what did that look like? So it was a couple of houses the first year, and then how has your business grown then since 2008 up until today? What does that transition look like for you?
Yeah, so we just maybe 10, 12 or 15 houses in 2009, and we just have sort of gradually grown up all the way up until about 2014. Then we sort of shifted into another gear. It was around about 2011 and 12, we decided to the MLS was starting to get a little bit competitive, actually a lot competitive at that
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm.
The market had bottomed and, you know, flipping was now pretty happening, you know, in masses.
Mm-hmm.
And just more and more difficult, to get a deal on the MLS. So we sort of shifted to direct mail and going after, homeowners at that time. And
mm-hmm.
there wasn't too many people doing it in 2011 that way. And so once we did that, you know, our business kind of shifted into another gear and we were able to grow, doing more and more deals per year. And then we were able to kind of hire some people to help us out. Through the help of CG and other, you know, groups like that, kind of pushed us to outsource a little bit more to be able to kind of work on the business versus in the business.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're just really grateful. So now we're doing somewhere around 60, 70 deals a year. Still same thing, direct to owner, and just having a great time.
So I'm curious what works in Southern California now, because probably even in the last couple of years, it sort of sounds like you've been first to the punch, but there's always those, you know, the lagging market. You've got a ton of people now doing direct mail, and so I'm sure you're feeling that competition. What are you doing right now to kind of stay ahead of the curve?
Well, I guess, you know, it's funny you say what works in Southern California. If you ask most of the investors, nothing works. There's no deals out there.
Right.
There's too much competition. And, you know, there's some truth to that. There's a lot of competition. But I guess we've just tried to get better at what we're doing. So we still our primary source is still direct mail. And even though our response rate is probably, you know, a third of what it was when we started, we're still able to get a lot of deals that way. So it works. And we also do some internet stuff and we buy from wholesalers and we buy, you know, the occasional property from an agent that we used to work with who happens to have something. So it's kind of wherever you can locate a deal, but direct mail is still our bread and butter.
Interesting.
We've implemented a pretty good follow-up system as well. And we kind of looked back and realized that about a third of our deals are coming from our extended follow-up.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's been really important.
It's in the follow-up drip. We've sort of done the same thing. We put a lot of automated drips in place. I'm curious. Well, first I'm curious what your infrastructure looks like now. So you've got a pretty big acquisition strategy. What does your team look like for, you know, knocking down 60, 70 deals a year?
We have a what we call inside salesperson who takes all the calls, all the leads, kind of filters them, and she will work also some of the cold leads and just send out offers to everybody. And if it's a real hot lead or somebody that we can do an inspection with live, we have our outside sales rep, our guy on the ground here, and he's basically doing 10 to 15 inspections a week, meeting with homeowners, trying to lock up contracts. And then we have a full-time admin person and a couple of agents that we work with, and then Andrea and myself, and that's pretty much it.
I was going to say a part-time property manager.
Oh, that's right.
Kind of in-house.
Yeah, we've been collecting rentals along the way as our long-term retirement, so we do have a in-house part-time property manager as well.
And how many rentals do you guys have currently that are yours?
About 57 doors. 57. Mostly single families, but a couple of duplexes in there as well.
Okay. Awesome. And so rather than hiring like an outside property manager, you just have I imagine you can justify having a full-time person to manage that many.
Yeah. It helps us to feel a little bit more in control of what's going on.
Sure. Yeah. And that's just, 57 doors, that's just about a full-time property manager almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we did it, ourselves for a while. And then after a while, you just kind of get worn out with, trying to fill vacancies and taking maintenance calls and that kind of thing. So to outsource that
really huge.
Just was huge. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I get that. So inside sales is receiving calls from the marketing. I'm curious what direct mail is working for you guys right now. And that sounds like that's generating the majority of the leads that are coming into the office.
Yeah. So are you talking in terms of the list?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. Who are you mailing? Who are you going after? Because I imagine it's probably different based on what part of the country you're in, but also because there's a lot of competition. Some of the easier lists, there's a lot of other people hitting those lists right now. So sure. I'm curious what's working for you guys.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, I mail to probably 10 or 12 different lists. So we definitely still, even though absentee owner is the one that everybody's going after, it mm-hmm. still works, still generates deals. So we continue to mail to absentee owner. Mm-hmm. And we're in such a big market, I guess. I mean, we were telling you earlier, we work about an hour radius from where we live, which probably is closer to 7 or 8 million people, if you include that.
Wow.
And so, we kind of mail to a lot of these different cities and different areas. So we do absentee owner, we do some inheritance mailing, probate. We are big on probate. Mm-hmm. We've tried just about all of it. There's a vacant list out there from Kent Clothier. We do that one. But they all kind of work, to varying degrees. It kind of depends on the area you're in. If I'm sending an absentee owner to Orange County, that one doesn't work so well. But if I send it out to Palm Springs, it works a little bit better.
So. Is that because of competition, you think? Or there's probably more absentee owners in Palm Springs.
Yeah, probably more absentee owners there. I don't know. It's a little bit different owner and the competition as well. I mean, everybody wants an Orange County property. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of all of those factors, I think.
And is it almost all postcards? Are you doing some yellow letter or a little bit of everything?
We're pretty much sending out a simple letter right now on white paper with a picture of our family on there.
Yeah.
Really? And
working. It's worked pretty well.
We've tried it all. We've done yellow letters. We've done the postcards. And this letter we've been doing for probably the past year and a half or so. And we get a lot less hate calls.
You look like a nice, sweet family. Nobody's going to call and hate us.
Yeah, we still get some hate calls, but it's a lot less. And it's just, I don't know, it's a little more clear, I guess. We're kind of trying to stand out and brand ourselves as people who know what we're doing. We're not just some fake handwritten scratched note. Not downputting those because they work, but we just decided to go that route. So
interesting. And so what sort of volume are you sending out these letters? Is it 5,000, 10,000 a month, 20,000 a month?
We send around 15 to 20,000 a month.
Are you doing them in-house or you have like a fulfillment company that's doing the, because especially since it's an envelope and a picture of you guys.
Yeah, we're not doing that in-house.
That's a lot.
We use Yellow Letter HQ, which I absolutely highly recommend to anybody.
Really? There's a handful of the Yellow Letter type companies, but Yellow Letter HQ, huh?
Yeah, 50 to 55 cents per letter sent out with a live stamp. I mean, it's unbelievable price. Dude, I can't do it that cheap.
Darn good. Really? 55 cents with a
Yes. It is standard. It's standard mail, but it has a live stamp. So it looks like first class.
Wow. Interesting. Well, that's good to know. That's really
And the service is fantastic. I mean, I really recommend that company.
Interesting. I tell you, when we're offline, I'm going to get a contact from you if that's all right. Because we're looking for something like that. That's perfect.
Yeah.
What about high equity? Are you hitting that list at all? Or the, you know, lived in the house more than 10 years?
We do some, I don't really call it a high equity, but we mail to owner, like owner occupants. Yeah. Yes. And I do filter by equity and also, age in the home.
Length of time. I got you.
Yeah. We don't, I don't really go back 10 years. I kind of go back to where I think they actually would have equity. So for us right now, it's only about three or four years.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. If you have rapid appreciation, then chances are they've got good, they've got good equity. That's interesting.
Yeah. We've at least doubled since 2011, 2012 around here.
Interesting. No, I love the acquisition strategy. It's very similar to us in that we, I mean, right now it's like wherever you can get a deal. So we buy from wholesalers, we send postcards, we get the one-off agent deals. I mean, it's just wherever you can get it, but you just have to have a lot of fishing poles in the lake, it feels like, to get the deals.
Right. Yeah. Our friend describes it as, what does he say? Like picture a bathtub with, you have one faucet going in there. But if you have, like, if you line that bathtub with faucets, then, you know, your tub starts to fill up. So you just got to have a lot of different sources for, you know, getting deals.
Yeah, that's sort of what it feels like. So let's shift gears. I'm curious if you guys are doing – how many flips are you doing right now?
Flips, about 20 to 25 probably. That's kind of what feels comfortable for us. That's the one thing that we have not outsourced yet is the project management. So I'm still kind of our project manager. It's a little bit crazy and hectic, and 20 to 25 in a year is about what I can handle.
That's a
and
lot.
Stay sane.
Yeah,
sure. The rest of our deals are wholesales.
Because I remember when you guys came into CG, it sounded like you guys had didn't you have a pretty good system for managing projects and getting them turned around in a timely manner? I'm curious what that looks like.
Yeah, at that time, I think Doug had built something out in Podio for managing our projects, and it was working pretty well. We kind of had a contractor problem shortly thereafter.
Yeah, like a couple months later.
Yeah, the contractor we had been using for 4 or 5 years, he was amazing up until all of a sudden he wasn't. And we were working everything with him through Podio, and that was working fantastically. And then once he kind of disappeared, now we have 4 or 5 different contractors. We're a little bit hesitant to give any one person too many jobs. So to get them to all work through Podio has been a little bit of a challenge, and we're not quite there yet, but trying to get sort of back on track with that.
Yeah.
So your original guy, though, you and him would stay, I guess, abreast of projects because you're both in Podio. He was looking at it, you were looking at it, and you were both updating it, it sounds like.
Right. Yeah.
Gotcha. Interesting. Yeah, because we've probably similar to a lot of other, especially folks in CG, where we're rehabbing so many deals, you're juggling so many contractors, there's so many variables based on who you're using. It's just become pretty cumbersome to keep up with, especially as I'm not sure about you guys, but our rehabs have sort of drifted up where, you know, our average rehab used to be 30,000. Now I feel like it's 60, 70, 80,000.
Yeah.
And managing 30 of those at one time, it's just been super cumbersome. So staying on top of that, you know, having a good system is crucial. So that's kind of where we are right now, is trying to put the right systems in place to keep everybody on track. I'd love to see what you had in Podio. So you had a project management tool that you had created yourself?
Yeah. I love Podio, and I love, I don't know, I kind of geek out on it a little bit. So we built this sort of rehab management tool. It's pretty simple, but it was kind of had all the major timelines there, kind of task driven. And you could, it was incorporated with a design app that we built as well. So, you know, Andrea is also our interior designer and picks everything and manages all that stuff. So she could take a picture of a pink color and save that in Podio as an item, and then just drag that over anytime we want to use a house with that pink color, and it's got the skew and everything like that on there.
Oh, so man, that's awesome.
That way. Yeah.
But,
you know, you also have to have a contractor who is versed on Podio and knows how to work it that way as well.
Or a project manager, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So when you picked up a house, in terms of designing it, you could literally just drag and drop all the different items you wanted in it, and then just hand it to your contractor, and he knew basically exactly what to buy.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, as long as those items had already been entered in. And if you have new ones, then you just, you know, takes a minute to enter in one or two new items, like you want a new countertop over here or something like that.
But it was so easy. You know, with the app on my phone, I could just take a picture of it right in Home Depot or Lowe's and add it right to the system.
Oh, my gosh. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, when it works.
When you can get a contractor to do it, it's awesome, right?
Right.
I could see how that'd be an up. Yeah, it would help if you had one or two, but if you're juggling five or six different contractors to try to get all of them on that platform, I could see that could become tricky.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think like you said, Andy, I think it'd be best with a project manager who's out there every day with the contractors. I think that would be the best. It'd work best in that scenario.
Interesting. So you guys have, it sounds like you've sort of changed your model a little bit here as of late, where you're maybe not rehabbing as many as you were, and now are you moving more to a wholesale model? I'm just curious, what made you make kind of change your model?
Yeah, we've we get a lot of leads, and they're expensive, and we have deals, but they're not necessarily a house we want to flip, or maybe it's out of our area, or just sort of out of the scope of a project we want to take on at that time. So we just start wholesaling more and more over the last several years. And I absolutely love wholesaling. I mean, for all the reasons. I mean, it's good. It's profitable and it's low risk, and it's cash in the business.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been doing a lot of that, but still sort of cherry picking the favorite projects that we want to do.
You know, it's similar to us too. We don't wholesale even as much as we did last year. I think part of me always thinks, man, if there's meat on the bone, I want it. I don't want to give it away. So I'm sure there's times where you're debating, is this worth keeping ourselves or selling to somebody? But if there is this sort of the bird in the hand, it's worth two in the bush. Sometimes just getting the money and moving on and not having any of the risk is nice as well.
Yeah,
definitely. And we have those conversations all the time. What do we do with this one? Go back and forth, the positives and negatives.
Would you ever get that your buyers probably know that you flip. Are they ever looking at you cross-eyed like, well, why aren't they flipping this one? Is there something that I need to know about this?
Some do.
Some do. Yeah.
Some definitely do. But I think our best buyers, they don't care. Most of them are landlords or
– or like big, you know, massive companies that flip a lot of properties.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
They don't care. They understand. We're just in this as this is our business. This one we decided to wholesale, so it doesn't matter to them.
Yeah. So you guys have been at this for a while. Is there one deal in particular that you guys have been a part of that you would say is your best deal ever?
There's been a lot of deals, and a lot of them have good things, and a lot of them have bad things. We were thinking about that this morning, and I guess this one comes to mind that we did about a year ago. It was in a little city called El Monte, which is one of these, one of the many cities in the inland LA area.
Uh-huh.
And it was a mailer was negotiated by our inside salesperson on the phone. We never had seen the property. It was a duplex, two separate detached properties. And she locked it up for $350,000, and we ended up putting about $65,000 into the house, or both houses actually.
Mm-hmm.
Cause it was, didn't take a whole lot of high end finishes or anything like that. We just needed to do cosmetics to both of them. And we ended up selling that property for, I think, $610,000, multiple offers. And we maybe went out there once or twice.
Wow.
I think that's why we chose that one as our best deal ever, because of the lack of headache.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a good profit, and it was just, like she said, just smooth, lack of headache. The first buyer closed.
It was nice. Was that recent? Was that a recent deal?
Yeah, I think we sold it about, 9 months, 12 months ago
was
when it closed. Yeah.
Those are I feel it's like the 80-20 rule. I mean, 20% of the time you're making the majority of your money on just easy deals. And it's like the other 80 are just a sludge, man, to try to get them done. And sometimes you're just eking out a profit, but it's those ones, that you barely put any time and effort into, and they're the home runs. Those are the memorable deals.
They keep you coming back.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's a pretty sweet payday for a little bit of work. So $610,000 for a duplex, man. That's your pricing is just so crazy compared to Georgia, man. That's insane. And is that somebody that was going to buy it to rent it? I mean, can you even make money on a duplex at $610,000?
I don't know. All I know is this area was. It may have been, a family that was moving in that was going to move in, in-laws or something in the back house.
I gotcha.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I wouldn't pay that much for duplex to keep it. But
it's crazy. Well, guys, this has been awesome. I want to make sure that our listeners know, too, that if you enjoy listening to Doug and Andrea, They also have a podcast called Spouses Flipping Houses. And Doug, maybe tell us where we can point these folks to.
Yeah, so just head over to spousesflippinghouses.com and check us out. You can subscribe on iTunes or listen right there on the website. We have a blast doing the podcast. It's we focus on real estate, and in particular doing it with, you know, a spouse or brother, father, mother, loved one, something like that, where you have a relationship kind of beyond just the business.
That's awesome. Well, Doug and Andrea, thanks so much for being on the show again. I really appreciate it. This was fantastic.
Thanks so much for having us,
yeah,
Ken.
Ken, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
No problem. Take care, guys. Hey folks, it's Ken again, and I want to talk to you for just a quick second about becoming a private lender with our company, Georgia Residential Partners. If you've got money right now sitting on the sidelines, maybe it's in a bank account earning less than 1%, or maybe it's in the stock market and you're worried about where the stock market is headed, you might want to consider becoming a private lender with our company. Where you might be getting 1% to 2% on a CD or a money market account right now, when you become a private lender with us, you're actually well into the double digits in terms of return on investment. Again, if you've got money that's not working for you right now, it's sitting on the sidelines, and you want to get it into investment that's safe, that's passive, and has the opportunity to get you well into the double digits, please reach out to me. You can actually contact us through our website at dealfarm.net. Go to the Contact Us page. It goes right into my inbox, and I will reply and set up a time to talk. Thanks so much for listening to The Deal Farm. We'll see you on the next episode. Take care.